Radio 950 KJR, a little after 7 o'clock here on this Friday. Red Box Football Friday. It is a bye week, so it doesn't quite have the same punch that it normally has. Nevertheless, plenty to talk about. And so we bring in our Seahawks insider. He's back on American soil, getting used to his jet lag, perhaps overcoming it. Hopefully, Greg Bell is with us here on Chuck and Buck. Hi, Greg.
Hi, guys. I decided I'd miss London. That's probably more than the jet lag. I just miss it. It was such a great time.
Greg, don't start turning into Niner Nate on us and being a downer in the morning. We already have one of those to deal with.
I love that right in front of your wife on the trip, you had like an affair with a city, an entire city, while you're on.
She was part of it. She was complicit to it. So we both had a great. Yeah, it was fabulous. Like I said, let's get a London team in the NFC West. Please.
I want to ask you something, guys. We didn't have time to bring this up yesterday in the roundtable, but I'm going to throw one of my crazy ideas at you and see what you think of this. I don't like the idea of having one European city, one NFL team, and one European city. I'm not sure NFL players are going to want to play for that team. I'm not sure what that does for a flight schedule, and I think it may create too many complications. But what I was wondering is if you want to grow this game globally, Greg, what if you did have like a sister city outside of America where every team in the National Football League played one game in that city every year? So like Barcelona becomes, you know, the Seahawks sister city, and you've got Seahawks, you know, uniforms and T-shirts and jerseys everywhere that you look, and you went about it that way, where you just every year you would play one game, so it makes it fair to the National Football League and to your scheduling, and you also grow the game in 32 cities as opposed to just locking in on one.
Wow, Barcelona. You just mentioned my favorite city in the world that I've ever been
to. Well, there you go.
I guess the problem would be to find 32 cities to be able to support that and have that many of much of a market for it. But you're right. The London situation is complicated mainly by the schedule. I mean, do you extend the regular season by adding another bye week so that every team could have a bye after playing at London? Do you give London a block of 6 or 8 home games in a row and then 6 or 8 home game or away games back in the States? I don't know. That's the complicating factor. And, yeah, it would sure help if there was a second team there. Now, the NFL isn't about to expand. They have 32 teams, and the formula has worked with the divisions for a long time now, 28-some years now. So, and I just can't see an owner moving a team out of the United States to London. So it just practically doesn't make sense at the moment. And I think it's also a collective bargaining issue that they would have to, because of all the complicating factors, have to go to the players' union and agree on certain aspects of a team in London. The next collective bargaining agreement, of course, expires after the 2020 season. So it sounded so optimistic and doable when we were there. And then you get back here and say, well, wait a minute, how could they actually do this?
Yeah. Well, and you're right. There might not be 32 cities to go around, but maybe you lean on London for 4 of them, and then you divide up that country. You know, like Man U becomes the Seahawks, and Liverpool people become the Broncos, and so on and so forth. I mean, if you want to really grow it and you really want to think outside the box on this thing, then maybe there's not a permanent home for an NFL team, but everybody can take a little part in this going forward every season. I don't know.
Here's why and current NFL owners would be against that, because then you'd be slicing the pie in thinner pieces. They hate that.
Yeah.
The only reason any professional sports league in America goes for expansion is the expansion fees. And Las Vegas, for instance, when they entered the NHL, the expansion fee was about 4 times what the previous expansion fee was. So every owner got $20, $30, $40 million into their pocket, straight cash, because of expansion. in expansion fees, whatever the total ended up being. And that's, if the NFL's revenue pie is getting sliced in smaller and smaller pieces, that's when the owners can say, no, 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 we can't do this. And that's what I think is problematic about more than a couple teams in Europe, or even more than one team in Europe, is you'd be slicing the pie that much thinner.
Yeah, it would be another slice, but it is another entirely new pie. So, true. I don't know. Something to kick around. Give it some thought. Get back to me. Punch some holes in it, and let's discuss it at a later date. Greg Bell is with us, our Seahawks insider, brought to you by the Michaels Automotive Group, a family-owned and operated dealership that places customer satisfaction as its highest priority. They feature three of America's most popular automotive brands, Toyota, Volkswagen, and Subaru, all located at the same location just off I-90 and Eastgate. I brought up with you yesterday Frank Clark and possibly his big payday that is coming up. Bucky and I started discussing it, ended up running out of time discussing it in our last segment. So I wanted to pick that conversation back up with you, and just maybe you can clarify for the listening audience what Frank Clark is doing for himself in terms of his financial portfolio through these first six games of the 2018 season.
Well, it's hard to overstate how much of a raise he's going to get next year. He makes $943,000 this year, and his final year of his rookie contract is a second-round pick, base salary of $943,000. I'm going to list off some names of the top 4-3 defensive end contracts in the league right now in terms of average contract. It starts at $17.1 million per year. That's the top, and that's Ezekiel Ansah of the Lions, DeMarcus Lawrence of the Cowboys. They each make $17.1 million per year.
Both franchise, by the way. Both franchise.
Correct. Yeah. One-year contract, franchise deals. So the franchise, that's the franchise tag number for this year. Next year's franchise tag number, based on inflation and everything that the franchise tag has done in the last 3 or 4 years, at defensive end, will probably be around $18.5 million. Chandler Jones, $16.5 million. Melvin Ingram, $16 million. Jason Pierre-Paul, $15 million. Calais Campbell, $15 million. Everson Griffin, $14.5 million, whose future with the Vikings is completely up in the air because of mental health issues. Daniel Hunter, $14.4 million. Robert Quinn of the Dolphins, $14.2 million. Carlos Dunlap of the Bengals, $13.5 million. Cameron Jordan of the Saints, $11 million. Those are all the guys above $10 million per year. You could easily, not even argue, but easily argue that Frank Clark has outperformed probably 8 of those 10 guys I just listed in performance the last couple of years. So now you're already putting him at the $17 to $18 million a year contract situation at age 25 from $900,000 to $18 million. That's why he's playing through what he said were 2 broken hands last year. That's why he ripped the IVs out of his arm on a Friday to play on a Sunday against the Rams from food poisoning after losing 12 pounds. That's why he's playing through everything and being a good soldier and talking to the media and being friendly and a very, not that he hasn't been before that, but he knows what's at stake here and that he's on the cusp of a potentially 200% raise next year. And even if the Seahawks franchise him, which I don't think they will, I think for salary cap purposes, they're going to give him a multi-year deal, 4 or 5 years, so they can spread that signing bonus. It's going to be huge across many years. But they could, so even if they do franchise him, he's going to get $18 million after $900,000. That's what sacking the quarterback means in the NFL right now, especially when you're 25 years old. I think he's going to get all that and a bag of chips after this season. Yeah. And if the Seahawks go to free agency, they're going to lose him because somebody in the league is going to overvalue him because he's a pass rusher off the edge. Somebody's going to give him close to potentially $20 million a year if he goes to free agency. So the Seahawks clock is from now until March 15th or whatever the end of middle of March, the first date of the NFL New Year in 2019 is. That's the Seahawks window to get it done. I think they're going to do it.
So you don't think, G, that there's any chance that these guys could, that the Seahawks could come to him with something? It's going to be over 15, probably less than 20. You don't think they can come to him somewhere in the 16, 15, 16, 17 range and get him signed, locked up with? My thought on it is he could still say, you know what, I am kind of still injured. I'm still playing with a couple jacked up hands, and I would sign that guaranteed contract now. You don't think they can still get him that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they might be able to get him at average value for less than that with a bigger signing bonus.
Okay.
That's certainly possible, and that's why you make it a 4 or 5 year deal. maybe average value ends up being at 13 or 14 million, but you give him a $40 million signing bonus. We're just talking hypothetical numbers off the top of my head at 7:10 in the morning. But I do think that's the Seahawks' advantage here in that they know what he's done. And they also, let's not forget from Frank Clark's perspective, they drafted him when some people had him completely off the draft board, undraftable, because Michigan kicked him out of its program because of a domestic violence assault, arrest, and brief jailing in Ohio. 4 months after that incident, the Seahawks drafted him. And you can bet Frank Clark appreciates that. And there are teams that were completely not going to touch him at all. And I was in the draft press room after that pick was made at Renton, and they were getting heat. We were all pressing on Pete Carroll and John Schneider. What the heck did you just do? You drafted a domestic violence issue into your locker room. They were rightly criticized for it, and Frank Clark has exceeded that expectation, and not only just being off the field, he's had some incidents like sucker punching Jermaine Effetti and saying inappropriate things on Twitter about a female reporter for writing about his domestic violence issue. But he has matured rapidly in the last year at a perfect time because he knows it's time to get paid and he's about to do it.
Yep. Well, we sit here at the bye week, more time to sort of digest six games into the year. How would you grade them to this point in the year? I know that's kind of a cliche in sports talk radio, so you use whatever scale you'd like, Greg, but how would you say that they have performed based on what you thought they were going to perform like before the year began?
They may not admit it, Chuck, but they have exceeded, I think, even their own expectations, especially on offense and in the pass rush. And those were the running game and the pass rush were the two aspects of this team that were going to make or break them this year. And they're not made or broken yet. But their ability to run the ball consistently to set up the pass in the last 4 weeks is something they didn't know they had. They hoped to do it. They wanted to do it. They said they were going to do it. They planned. They hired a new offensive coordinator and line coach to do it. They brought in DJ Fluker to do it. But they didn't know if it would actually work. And it's worked most glaringly, it worked against the Los Angeles Rams interior defensive front that people are not supposed to be able to move and control. And they ran for 190 yards that day. So they are much further ahead in what they want to be offensively than they were in August and thought they may be in September. Absolutely. And again, if they had run the ball those first two games, they may be 4-2 and 5-1 right now. But if, ands, or buts, and all, yes, I get that. Defensively, the pass rush was not good. I could not foresee them affecting as many offenses in the pass rush as they have so far. I mean, they were even affecting the Rams. And Frank Clark was abusing an all-pro left tackle in that Los Angeles game. I didn't see that happening. I thought teams would be more effective in double-teaming Frank Clark and just leaving everybody else like Quentin Jefferson and Jerron Reed on their own one-on-one blocking and handle them. That hasn't happened. Nobody's been able to block Frank Clark consistently. Even Jefferson and Reed have gotten theirs. So if they can continue those two trends, I think the rest of the team can catch up to that and be a 8, 9, 10 win team. If it's 9 or 10 wins, you're talking about a potential playoff berth. And again, that all is above expectations. So if you actually happen to sign a letter grade, I'd probably tell you it was a B or B plus. Yet here they are only 3-3. So, you know, take that for what it means. You're talking all these positives, and we've been pretty positive coming off the last two or three games. Yet they're still three games plus loss up to the Rams out in the division.
Well, rest this weekend, recover, and try not to be forlorn over your lady love, London.
Well, fortunately, I'm not living in some absolutely terrible city that would make me miss it even more. It's one of the most fantastic cities in North America to live in. We all do. Thank you.
All right, Greg. Thanks, man. We appreciate it.
All right. Happy weekend. Thank you.
There's Greg Bell, Tacoma News Tribune. And, of course, you can follow him at GBellSeattle on Twitter for all the latest Seahawks information. Coming up next, we're going to talk to a man that was described as an Iron Man, even an assassin, back in his college days for his relentless football play. And now, how will he attack game day in Pullman? Jed Collins joins us next.
Available in every state. Now back to Football Friday, powered by Redbox, the smarter way to watch and play. On your home for the 12th man and the NFL, Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Just says on our phone, a little phone bank here, Bucky.
It'll
show the city.
Really?
Just says Pullman.
Pullman.
Pullman. The pulse of civilization this weekend.
Up on the Palouse.
Joining us now on the program to talk about the phenomenon that is taking place across the state. You can hear him with Ian Furness. Man, do they do a good segment. Tuesday's Cougar Roundtable. Alex Brink, Ian Furness, and this man, who was described as an Iron Man and an assassin when he was in college. Jed Collins is now with us. Hi, Jed.
How's it going, guys? How's it going over there?
Good. Sorry to wake you up this early.
You know what? The band has already started playing over here, so everybody's awake.
All right. Now, okay, you're there, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, please just describe the entire scene in Pullman as it sits. Now, you can start whenever you want,
and
then bring it up to modern day.
You know what the most beautiful thing was? I arrived on Wednesday. I pulled into town Wednesday at about noon. I'm joining the Board of Trustees, and so they line up the street with flags and people welcoming you, and in my head, I'm like, man, the red carpet really gets pulled out for these trustee meetings.
Yeah.
And then about halfway through, I realize, oh, there's somebody coming behind me. At about 10 minutes after me, the college game day buses rolled in, and it all made a little more sense. But I got a great welcoming, and I got to see what they're going to be able to see, which the spotlight on Pullman is going to do something very special to the nation, to recruits, to students that are looking to come here. It's really going to show you that unique quality Pullman has to offer. The two things kind of being said around town are everybody's coming back home. This is a place of family. And then from a football perspective, the term you hear from the players, the coaches, anybody in the athletic department is business as usual. You know, let's enjoy the excitement, feed off the energy, but it's just business as usual for us.
Are you missing a third thing that people are saying? That this might be the biggest outdoor frat party in history? I know you don't want to necessarily accentuate that, but I mean that is an element to this, right?
That is definitely an element. There is a cohort of diehard Cougs driving down from Spokane at about 2:33, some with little kids with them to join the party. I know around here, wake-up call is going to be out about 4 or 4:30 to get out there. It is going to be a definite scene, an amazing environment, but the energy, what I would like is to see the energy exist all day and last till the 4:30 kickoff. That's going to be a challenge starting at 6 a.m. I mean, by this time tomorrow, the party has already begun. So the excitement is building as Pullman looks at about capacity this morning. I know for a fact there are just more and more coming tonight and tomorrow. So it's going to be, you know, who has room in the inn and where are we going to put them all? And I would bet some people are going to be sleeping in their cars, but it's going to be quite a sight.
Well, I grew up in Illinois and then lived most of my adult life in Arizona. But I will tell you this, the reputation of your school, your alma mater, Jed Collins, is that if any fan base can pull off the stamina to party from Tuesday till kickoff on Saturday, it's your school.
Yeah, I'd never cast any doubt in that category. I just wanted to make sure we keep our eye on the prize of winning the game against Oregon. But this is, you know, I got to go walk around the stadium, and you look out, and they're setting up the booth, and the fans are already starting to kind of, you know, claim their territory around it. I've got to talk to, you know, Cougars who have been donating and giving and being an impact for 50, 60 years, and they're comparing it to only the times when a president would come on campus. It's really taken the community, it's taken the Cougar Nation, and it's given us a nice, shiny jewel to point to and say, listen, our little school that everybody wants to put in the rearview mirror, we are in center stage. The program is going to shine. The athletic department is going to get a grand stage to play on. And most importantly, people are going to get to see what makes Washington State special again, and that's the family that forms while you're here. You know, spending time in Pullman is one of those unique places, but we are definitely going to have a party starting, I would assume, tonight, rolling through tomorrow until kickoff at 4:30. And it's going to start early. I don't know if I'm going to be in that 4 a.m. category, but I'm going to get down for some of the festivities.
Oh, yeah. You got to get down, Jed. I mean, you got to get first
You're
of all.
You're an Iron Man for a reason, Jed.
Well, Iron Man, another nickname, Jedzilla. I mean, if you get Jedzilla is your nickname, you got to get down. I mean, we're going to need Bloody Marys at 6:30, 7 o'clock for sure, okay? Just get with it. Hey, I played at LC State, down the hill a little bit, and we used to come up to Wazoo and party and jump into some frat parties and whatnot.
Leave their carbon footprint.
We did leave our carbon footprint a little bit. I'm not going to lie about that. One thing I was wondering. When it comes down to this game, when it comes down to Wazoo has this system that they just flat out put up points, and Oregon is whatever Oregon is, I don't know exactly what that would be. How does this whole thing look? Where, if you see weaknesses and strengths, how do you see either team, turning the favor in their odds?
You know, we're going to start with a huge competitive advantage. This home field crowd is going to give something special. I remember when I was being recruited here, Pullman is one of the top 25 hardest places to play. I think that environment is going to be brought back, and I'm hoping it's just a resurgence of what that is. Both these teams are very good teams. They're a play away from being undefeated. Washington State, you know, a missed PAT against USC, and Oregon, kind of a fluke deal down at the goal line against Stanford. So both these are going to be very good teams. Competitively, it's going to come down to the quarterback contest. Oregon's number one threat is this run game. Washington State has been proven to be able to stand up to that, and so what has beat them this year is going through the air. And so will the Washington State defensive backfield be able to compete against what's going to be a potential first round, high round draft pick? And then on the other side, this Gardner Minshew kid, the mustache, this is a chance to really jump into a national race for that H word nobody really wants to talk about. But if you win this one, I think you get thrown into that category. And it's also a chance for a young man to continue his career. He 6 months ago was hanging up his cleats, and as of 2 weeks ago, he's moving up draft boards. So the excitement continues to build around that story of which quarterback battle is going to ultimately win out. Oregon losing a few offensive linemen, getting banged up from a tough week last week. Washington State coming off the bye week a little bit fresher is going to play to, again, the Washington State advantage, because Oregon typically is a first-half team. They've been outscoring people 100 points in the first half. And so if we can come out with a good punch and really solidify it, get into the second half, make some adjustments against them, I think it's going to be a shootout because they're both very explosive offenses. But in my eyes, I'm hoping and I'm seeing Washington State being able to have more of an arsenal down the stretch and be able to put up a few more points.
Former Coug star, former NFLer, and current radio guy, because he joins Ian Furness every week right here at Sports Radio 950 KJR. Jed Collins is our guest here on Chuck and Buck in the Mornings, talking about the phenomenon that is taking place in Pullman this weekend, game day arriving, and this school responding like no other school has ever responded to this Saturday show. But you're right. There's a game to be played on Saturday, and you pointed out a couple of things that if you are going to pitch this to me, Jed, as this is a chance to gain a national spotlight, I think anybody that hasn't followed these programs to this point, all they would know about the two schools is Justin Herbert and Mike Leach. Herbert being possibly a number one pick in the NFL draft this upcoming year, and Mike Leach, you know, averages 60 points a game, and his teams never play defense. And they would be wrong if they thought that's all these two teams were about. You brought up Oregon's actually a run-first team, even with Herbert.
Yeah.
And Leach and the defense at Wazoo, even without Alex Grinch, they're still playing great defense there in Washington State this year, and those might be the two biggest factors on Saturday. Don't you agree?
I would 100% agree with that. Washington State has the number one pass defense in the Pac-12 right now. And as you mentioned, Oregon is a run-first team, a 60% run. They ran 49 times last week. That's an incredible number, especially when you start to compare it against Washington State. You say 49 carries, people think you're talking about the entire season. But Mike Leach, you know, you got to give all credit. He has built this program. He is the reason College Game Day is here. And he's also the reason there's confidence. You know, we're going to go into game day. I expect Lee Corso to pick us. Why? Because we're a good team, because we have this home field advantage. We've won three in a row against Oregon. I mean, so as of very late, we've had their number. And then the ultimate factor is this is going for, we have 10, going for the 11th straight home victory in Pullman. And so if you can kind of put a stamp on number 11 with College Game Day, it's just going to be an atmosphere that I've got text messages this morning for people looking for tickets and hotel rooms. I've had no less than 40 or 50 throughout the week. It is our Woodstock. This is an event that every Coug is going to remember for a long while. And the longtime Cougs, I'm telling you, they are as excited as they've been for a Cougar football game as has been seen in a long, long while.
I love that you compared it to Woodstock.
It
Boy,
is.
Boy, the image that you just drew up for me right there, Collins.
Yeah. When you see the drone videos of the RV lots and the kind of campgrounds, there's going to be some comparisons drawn.
I can't
It'll be a
wait
party.
Until 25 years down the road when all of the children that were born because of this weekend get together.
Conceived at Pullman stock. Game day stock.
Perfect. And talk about the game day weekend that is the reason that they exist. I can't wait. I can't wait. Apparently, my mom and dad just met that weekend, and I was conceived on the lawn.
Well, I mean, they've already declared a state of emergency, so we're headed in the right direction. We need to get some impromptu band set up, but other than that, the show has begun.
Yeah. Well, as a red-blooded American male, I would say have fun this weekend, but as a red-blooded American male, I would also say be careful.
Be very careful.
I will. I got my little girls coming, so I'm on
there
my best
go.
Behavior.
All
I got to show them what Pullman's about.
All right, Jed. Well, thanks, man. We appreciate you joining us, and have a great time this weekend.
I will. Go Cougs.
All right. Jed Collins joining us here on the program. And, again, you can hear him with Ian on Tuesdays. He joins Ian and Alex Brink, and they do their little Cougar roundtable. I didn't even ask him who he's picking to win because I think we kind of figured that
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I think it was pretty obvious.
The analysis was pretty clear there. All right. Yeah. I have a feeling Fact or Fiction might land on this game as well.
It's time for Fact.
Just the Fact, Jack! Just a Fact, Jack!
Or Fiction, powered by the Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest.
Sports Radio KJR brings you Fact or Fiction every day, Monday through Friday, all four shows. 7:35 with us, 11:50 with Puck and Cliff, 2:35 with Ian, 4 o'clock with Softy and Mr. Fain. Your opportunity to win $1,000 in cash every week, perhaps, from Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest. They've also ponied up $10,000 to pay somebody at the end of the year. And when I say somebody, I mean the person who's best at playing Fact or Fiction. You do have to get the most number of correct responses throughout the course of the football season in order to win the $10,000 cash prize at the end of the year. You only have to get one right this week, though, to be eligible for the $1,000 prize that we'll give away once the week comes to an end. So we, of course, on this program have been the butt of many jokes for our poor picking to this point. We have experienced a little bit of a surge since introducing the Shirt of Shame. Yesterday, though, Bucky had to watch his five-star pick dominate the Arizona Cardinals on Thursday Night Football, and I guess I kind of talked you out of that.
A little bit. I needed to stick to my guns, but I get it. I went twice with the Broncos. Being a Bronco fan, I don't want to get to where I'm just picking them and act like a clown. I truly believe the first two picks. It didn't work out, and so this one I did believe strongly.
I was with you. I mean, that's the reason that I picked up the Broncos defense 10 minutes before the game.
And got 44 points for it. I literally last night looked at that and I'm like, how dare you pick up their defense and you told me not to pick it?
Well, I thought they were going to dominate. I thought it was a good pick. I was just trying to protect you. I even thought about on yesterday, because we kind of tried to pick the Thursday night game.
Right.
Taking the Broncos, but then I thought that would be harsh.
Actually, I would have been fine with it.
You've been all right?
I would have been fine with it. Okay. Because I thought it was a for sure win.
Yeah.
Which it was.
Yeah, it was. They dominated.
Killed them.
Yeah. So sorry. I guess sorry?
No, no, it's fine. Necessary? You say sorry if I have to put that darn shirt on I picked Dallas.
That's true. I'll save my apology for then.
Yes.
Well, it is Slick Hawk's turn, and I know he's back in town, but apparently he's like, I can't wake up at 7:30 to come on the show and make the pick, but I can text at 4:40 this morning with a very long, very thorough Fact or Fiction, not only pick, but explanation as to why he's making the pick.
Guaranteed Sir Poops-a-Lot Slick was on the throne while he's texting us a novel, for crying out loud.
Thank you. I didn't even see that, but you are absolutely right. He has a poop schedule that he keeps to, and he poops every morning at 4:40, 4:50, 5:20, 5:50. Then it's out of his system, and then he can sleep.
Right, right, right. Then he gets to work, and he has seven of them during a show. Yes.
That's what happened.
That's exactly what happened.
He was on the throne, and he wrote a very long, long text. All right, so I don't know if I want to read the whole thing or not.
Pretty good.
I will just say that he's going with the College Game Day is coming to Pullman for the first time ever. The buzz and excitement for newly ranked Wazoo is going to be palpable on Saturday afternoon in the Palouse. They found a true gem in Gardner Minshew.
You
to finally acknowledge that, Slick Hawk.
Corn stash.
And he's tearing up the conference. All these factors lead to the Cougs giving 3 points to Oregon. The Ducks come into Pullman flying high, he writes.
Quack, quack.
Off a very tough, emotional home win against the Huskies, they're now going to go on the road and match that energy and intensity level of Washington State in a typical emotional letdown type game, question mark, question mark, question mark. You're damn right they are. Slick Hawk concludes, give me Oregon. Did that analysis, Jed Collins gave his analysis of the game, and you pretty much knew he was going to pick, right?
Right.
I wasn't given a choice on this, by the way.
Slick Hawk gives his analysis, and basically he just contradicts himself.
Yeah, I thought he was going with Wazoo.
He's not. Give me Oregon +3 as they meet their fourth-ranked opponent in a row, and if not for an inexplicable fumble against Stanford, they knocked them all down. Let's go, Ducks.
True. Right.
He made it with his heart.
He did make it with his heart, even though his whole entire argument was basically saying it's a letdown game and Wazoo. Yeah, what? And then, but I'm glad he didn't go against the Ducks.
Going with the Ducks.
Even though he might have to wear the shirt of shame.
I the fact that the Cougs are favored in this game, man, that's surprising to me.
I think they should be favored if the Ducks actually showed up on Tuesday, because they would get drunk and hungover. The fact that they're only going to show up right before the game. Yeah, I don't know if they should be favored.
All right, so he's going with Oregon. So that's your pick to base your response off of. Text fact if you agree with Slick Hawk. Text fiction if you disagree. You got 12 minutes to do so. Again, Oregon on the road getting 3 points from Washington State in Saturday's big Pac-12 game. All right, coming up next on the program, speaking of the Pac-12, Bryce Love is made a decision to come back to college, and it couldn't have backfired any more. What do you do with this story versus the Nick Bosa story? What is the future of college players deciding whether or not to turn pro? And will Love and Bosa kind of change those thoughts? We'll discuss it next.
Available in every state.
Seattle. Flat out lied to you. And I'm sorry. Really sorry. But I think you're actually going to like the truth.
That's true.
Yeah. I teased that we were going to talk about Bryce Love and Nick Bosa here.
That's later.
We're going to do that later because I misread my sheet in front of me.
Instead, you get a Hall of Famer.
Instead, you get a Hall of Fame left tackle, Walter Jones, joining you, as he does every Friday with us at 7:45. Our weekly visit with the great Walter Jones, brought to you by Heritage Distilling, proud home of BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon and Batch Number 12. It's just not football without Batch Number 12 vodka, bourbon, or gin. Drink, pass, and repeat. Good morning, Walter.
Good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
We're good, but every time I read that, Bucky's mouth starts to water over BSB.
Yeah.
Not a bad choice.
My liver doesn't like it, but my mouth does. I'm going to tell you that. Exactly. Hey, by the way, before we get into this whole thing, still haven't gotten my shirt. You know, my greatest of all time shirt.
What's happening?
You know, you're kind of big leaguing me a little bit, and I don't appreciate it.
I got you. The next time I'm in the studio, I'm going to leave it there for you. So I got you.
All right. And by the way, I'm still probably triple XL, even though I'm super skinny now.
Yeah.
I got you. 10.
You're not even going to recognize him when you see him again, Walter. He weighs like 165 pounds.
Okay, that's not true. I would have to have a disease in order to be 165. Hey, Walter, I got a question before we get into Seahawks stuff. You played at Florida State, right?
Yes.
So you hear all this hype going on about Pullman, game day coming there. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to Pullman for any of the party stuff going on there, but how does Florida State, I'm actually curious, how's Florida State compared to as far as getting after it on a Saturday morning or afternoon?
Hey, just for you saying that, that's where I'm at right now. I'm down in Tallahassee getting ready for a game this weekend, so it's a great place to be, man. I'm so far removed from it, but I'm a fan now, so I'm getting a chance to tailgate this weekend. So I'm looking forward to it, man, to kind of get out there and see how it is. I don't get a chance to tailgate at a Seahawks game, so I'm getting a chance to do it this weekend at Florida State.
Yeah. Florida State's, I would imagine, pretty good. But yeah, Walter's from Alabama, so he knows how high the bar gets set.
Yes, very high. Very high.
He knows what the tide does on Saturdays. All right, Walder. Well, let's talk a little football. Let's talk some Seahawks football here on this bye week. 3-3, 6 games into the year. I mean, how are you feeling about this team? Do they strike you as a team that has put some things together and could end up being in the playoffs at the end of the year?
Oh, they definitely can. You know, so I think they feel pretty good where they're at going into the bye week. You done played 2 games where you could have won that game. You could have won the Rams game, but you didn't. But you got to London and you won a game that you didn't know how it was going to turn out. You just wanted to get that win and get out of there without any injuries. So you're feeling pretty good going into this next season push. So, you know, everything is going well. The running game looking good. The defense is coming along. So as Pete looking at it, I know you got to feel good of where this team is at. And, you know, just keep, you know, what you got to do is continue to win games. And hopefully that game again, because you know the Rams are the team to beat in this division. So you just got to continue to keep working and getting better. And hopefully when that game come around the next time, that game going to mean something for both teams.
During your time with us here at KJR as a member of our team, we have asked you in the past a lot of questions about Jermaine Ifedi when he was struggling, and I'm not so sure how many we've asked since he started to play a little bit better, so I'm going to be the one to ask it. What do you think of Jermaine Ifedi so far, his progress, and some of the strides that he's made?
Well, he's making great stride. I tell people all the time that as an offensive lineman, when you throw it in the fire like that, it always takes you probably about 3 years. When I got in the league, my third year in the league is when I start understanding a lot of stuff. You got to learn how to be a professional. You got to learn how to go out there and compete every Sunday. So I think what Jermaine is doing, the game is getting a lot slower for him. And there's no pressure. You know, he understands. And we got a good offensive line coach now. Not saying Cable wasn't a good offensive line coach, but we got an offensive line coach that holds you accountable for your mistakes, everything that you do out on the football field. So he's in his third year, so you can watch him seeing that the game is getting slower. He's more, it seems like he's more patient while he's out there run blocking or pass protecting. So I think as the season goes along, he's just going to get better and better.
How much credit do you give to Fluker and having that veteran next to him?
I give a lot of credit. You know, we had Dwayne last year, and I think Dwayne last year was just trying to kind of get his feet settled. And then you got Fluker, a guy that's been in the trenches. He come from a proud organization from the Alabama, so he understands how to come out there and be physical. And I think once you see that guy on film, the way that he go out there and dominate or he put guys on his back, I think the other guys want to play like that. So if you lead by example, but I think he's more of a vocal guy that he could get all those guys going. So I think it's great. You know, you can see once he got into the lineup, the running game kind of started to move. So you've got to feel pretty good to what he's doing for this offensive line right now.
Last thing for you, Walter, and then we'll let you go enjoy Tallahassee. Frank Clark, I mean, he's had sort of a breakthrough here in the last few weeks to start 2018. I mean, I don't know if anybody gave you trouble, but what does Frank Clark, what kind of trouble does he give a left tackle? And how would, not to give any secrets away, but how would you defend him?
You know, I think as an offensive lineman, I think you have to, a guy like Frank, you have to try to slow him down. You know, anytime Frank can get going, that's when it's going to be tough for offensive lineman. And you watched the game last week, you know, if you're going to sit back on Frank, he's going to get to the quarterback. So I think what you have to do is kind of try to slow him down, get your hands on him and not him squat your hands down. He's been doing a great job of that. I think he understands, you know, this is his contract year. He understands that. I think the team understands that. But he understands that he got to be one of the leaders on that defensive line. So he got to go out there and continue to keep playing at a very high level every snap because all those guys look for him to go out there and make plays.
All right, man. Hey, enjoy yourself this weekend. Be careful, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, man. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, Walter Jones, the great Walter Jones, joining us here on the program as he does every Friday, brought to you by Heritage Distilling. Coming up next, we've got the eight top stories of the sports day. We're going to try to get it done in 8 minutes. We call it the Ocho.